Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, Wayne Liu. I had to stumble there because I forgot that we weren't doing Run It Back. Because I'm joined by my running back partner, Alex Wong. Alex, what's going on, man?
What's up, man? We're just recording the same thing we recorded yesterday.
Yeah, listen, I have like three friends left in the pandemic because I haven't made any energy at all to socialize with anybody. So, yeah, that's why I'm calling you once again, man. Listen, it's been a tough year, but you have been the go-to guest outside of V for the season, and we need to talk. We need to talk about this whole year. We need to recap it. We're going to give out some player grades because I think that's a great way to sort of cover and sort of discuss just like generally what we've seen from the players this season. But first, we got to talk about the play-in tournament that just happened. So the other games kind of ass. I'm not going to lie. Even the Grizzlies-Spurs game, like the Spurs fell down really big early and they came back, but then they lost. DeMar had a really bad performance. People started making comments. You know, whatever. Dylan Brooks was cool. JV had a monster double-double. But really, the big game was Warriors-Lakers. Honestly, like, did you enjoy the game? And yeah, I mean, what were some of your favorite moments from Warriors-Lakers?
Yeah, to be honest, that was the most engaged I've been with a basketball game this season. And, you know, I feel like because me and you, obviously, we watch all the Raptors games, and that's part of the work that we have to do. Like, how many meaningful Raptors games, how many meaningful basketball games did we actually really watch this season, right? Like they started off 2-8, and you could pick and choose. You know, if they go to Milwaukee and sweep Milwaukee, they have a huge game against the Lakers, which turned out to be Kyle's last game of the season. But we were so used to watching these meaningful games and celebrating 15-game win streaks and championship runs that this season was kind of tough. So, yeah, I was super into last night's game, and I found myself rooting for the Warriors. Like, I don't think I had a particular rooting interest. Mm-hmm. I just thought it would have been the most hilarious and, like, best storyline for the Warriors to win. You know, LeBron's IG content for like 48 hours leading up to playing Memphis would have been like absolutely hilarious.
Oh, man.
And I was also rooting against the Lakers because they didn't play Marc Gasol, which didn't make sense to me. Like, he might as well have just sat next to Drake and Michael B. Jordan last night because he was pretty lonely on the bench. But yeah, I was super into the game. And yeah, it was tough that the Warriors couldn't pull it out. You know, Andrew Wiggins looked great. You know,
bro, this is he was
my
looking
first time
incredible.
Watching the Warriors this season, like intensely. So I was like, "Wow, Andrew Wiggins is actually outplaying LeBron at one point." But obviously, you know, LeBron hit the shot. I can't believe he made that shot.
I can't believe he made that shot, man.
But I don't know. Amazing game, man. And Steph, honestly, like I know, like this is nothing new, but Steph is ridiculous, man.
No, absolutely, man. And it didn't even feel like he was having that great of a game. I thought the Lakers did a really good job guarding him. Like, AD's mobility was really good and important in that front. Like,
you remember the last play they double teamed before they called the timeout? They were like triple teaming him. Like, after
Steve Kerr should have called that timeout immediately.
Oh my god,
as soon as you see that there's no opportunity for him to transition pull up three, you need to call that timeout. And I understand the place was loud, you know, Kerr had to run onto the court, and get that time out. But listen, man, Nick Nurse would have sprinted out there, man. Nick Nurse would have dove on the referee. Because every second matters. He got the timeout with 2.1, which is like, there's not much time. You got like, even if you can just get the inbound in, like, it's going to be very tough. So, I mean, to be honest, the Warriors have no one to blame but themselves, though. Like, it's really just like, why did they just start turning the ball over like every possession? Like, that's what really got the Lakers back. The Lakers didn't play well. The Lakers don't look that good. I'm not going to lie to you. Unless LeBron is like...
No vibes. The Lakers have no vibes, man. There's no vibes there. It reminds me of that team, the Cavaliers team, that unfortunately swept the Raptors.
Which one?
But didn't look that great in 2018, right? Like, they basically... I mean, LeBron basically single-handedly carried them. There's way more talent on this team. But I don't know, man. The vibes are just weird. They've got a lot of players that, like Dennis Schroeder, and Drummond, of course. Like, I just don't feel like they should be playing big roles in these playoffs. And not to, I guess we can make it about the Raptors, because this is your Raptors podcast. Like, man, they could have used Kyle Lowry, man, for Talen Horton Tucker and whoever else they were gonna throw in. Like,
oh yeah, Schroeder and KCP. Yeah. First off, that's a garbage trade package, and I wouldn't have wanted to see that, because you have one long-term asset there, kind of, in THT. And you had already traded for Gary Trent at that point. How many shooting guards restricted do you want? Plus, THT is going to get a big deal because he's going to get that Lakers bump. I actually like THT as well, like, as a player. But, yeah, no, they could have used Kyle. Which, I mean, I guess that brings us to the topic of... Okay, so the actual Raptors news that we have is that Masai and Kyle did their season-ending press conferences. Let's start with Kyle because he was the first one to go up. First off, okay, I know you are a dedicated Zoom participant. Obviously, you are a very serious reporter who is engaged and actively following the team in the Zoom calls. I'm sure you got a, you know, paper and pen jotting down notes. What have you made of Kyle Lowry's media performance all season? Because he gave another classic one, obviously, like 40, 45 minutes answering questions from everybody. What have you made of Kyle Lowry's media performances this year? Because we know that in previous years he's been more ornery occasionally.
Yeah, you know, Kyle doesn't get excited unless it's ESPN or the American media, and that's just how it works with him. You know, the fake farewell that he did after the Nuggets game and obviously the exit interview that he did. To me, honestly, my initial reaction is just always, wow, I guess he's leaving. Because he's, you know, he doesn't do this, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyle's, you know how Kyle is, you know, he'll, you know, he'll make the jokes, you know, with you guys, and, you know, he'll usually keep things short, you know, but for him to spend that time, and that's why I was kind of surprised to hear him say that he, you know, just trusted Bobby and Masai at the trade deadline. I mean, he did, but I think, like, every indication was after the Denver game that he thought he was gone. And I mean, that was pretty much in line with everyone else's expectations, like in the basketball world. So yeah, when I see the performances, honestly, it makes me think about whether, you know, this is kind of just his farewell and he's just doing a favor, you know, to the local media and saying goodbye to them. But like, I don't know, like, I feel like we've done this with Kyle so many times, like even when he hit free agency, like what was it, 2017?
Yep.
It, like, you know, I think he wanted to go too, right? Like 3 months later after he came back, he was like, I wanted to sign in San Antonio.
Yeah. Why did Kyle say that, man? First off, San Antonio ain't done shit. It turns out San Antonio came to you, okay? San Antonio's best player, Kawhi, just came over. It's all good.
So I don't know. I guess like if he goes, it's going to be, I assume, Miami or Philly. Seems like the logical destinations, but I'm still holding out hope that he comes back. Like, I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to gauge because he obviously does have a connection to the city and to the franchise and to Masai.
Yeah.
Like the way he talked about how, you know, he really only stayed because of Masai. Like, that's a big part of why he's there. I think that means a lot considering what they've gone through. And you think about just not even the ups and downs, but like, you know, the coaching change, obviously the DeMar trade that they had to work through. You know, they've talked about like having these sit down conversations during the championship season. So I don't know. Does Kyle value just being a Raptor? You know, he obviously cares a lot about his teammates. His teammates love him, right? Like every teammate in the exit interview was like, Kyle's the best leader that I've ever had. Like, does he care about that? Like being part of this franchise in that way? because if you want to go win a championship next season, you know, the Raptors probably not the best place, but do you see yourself just finishing your career here? I don't know. I do feel like it'll be a tough choice for Kyle. I don't think he's looking forward to just getting out of here.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And I think also the money is going to be a very big part of it. Cause when he was asked about it, he was like, yeah, money and years talk, right? Like money talks, years talk. And yeah, first off, that would be a great line for a tangerine commercial. So, you know, just go ahead and take that. Just go ahead and take that for free from Kyle.
Money what, talks, you're not gonna announce Chris Boucher, Mary Brown's commercial next season. What's going on?
Unfortunately, the boat has passed on that one for me. The boat has sailed. But as I've said in previous times, man, if anybody out there is looking to advertise and involve a Raptor in any way, please involve Alex. He will give you some great contact ideas for a hefty fee, but it'll be worth it. I don't know what your rate is, but it's gotta be big.
Yo, can we talk about how all the chicken places are always fighting for like the Raptors space? You know, you got KFC, Popeyes has been involved too, right? Popeyes has been involved.
Popeyes did like a Raptors thing, but not like a player thing yet. I'm looking forward to Popeyes getting. Who do you think we'll get in there?
I don't know. Probably Gary. You know, I'm looking forward to Gary Trent, assuming he comes back. I think there's a lot of Gary Trent commercials coming. You know, I feel like he's the next bag getter on this team. Like this team is just full of young guys who just get bags, right? Like yep. Fred is like, yeah, I'll talk to PC Financial and say Tampa is terrible. Like this is all they did.
But it worked though. That's the thing, it worked. We shared that fun video of him driving out of his garage in a Ferrari. Like it thousands of likes, so you know it worked.
Shouts to Fred, man. Legit, honestly, like top 5% in terms of like just coolest players.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the NBA. Like, and this is not even just, I know, super biased from me and you, but like, no, legit.
No,
like,
we're very lucky to have Fred, man.
Yeah.
We're lucky to cover a guy like that. Yeah.
We're so lucky. Like, he's not going to be, you could argue, obviously, he's not like the most talented guy on this team, but I'm ready, you know, whenever the post Kyle Lowry era starts, like, he's the most important player on this team. And he's going to be the face. He's going to be like the face of the franchise, you know, next to Masai, to be honest. Like he's that guy. I've heard you talk about like how he always steps up and talks after
he does,
you know, tough stretches and losses and stuff. And no, you're right. Like it does say a lot. Like Fred is the voice of this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And he's had a great year on that front. And I think, you know, bringing the point back to Kyle, like I think that's one thing that's been really cool with Kyle is like this was the first year where I feel like genuinely he's transitioned into that Dirk Nowitzki kind of stage in his career where late in Dirk's career, now Dirk was different. He took some discounts. I'm sure he's getting that back somehow through back channels from Mark Cuban or whatever, but he took some discounts. But I think it was just like a reverence with Dirk. After he won that championship, his legacy was solidified. And it's not like he didn't want to chase any titles. It's not like, you know, teams didn't come calling. Like, remember the Warriors wanted Dirk, right? But he chose to stay. And like, even though he was around, even though he didn't fit the quote-unquote timeline of the team because he was older, like, there was just this constant reverence of him and that like he could scale his role up, he could scale his role down. And there was just sort of like this identity around the team that he still personified. And, you know, it, to extend the Dirk comparisons, like one of the things that happened was that like every single time the Mavericks brought in any European player, they were like, oh, he's got a bit of Dirk in him. You know what I mean? And like, to be honest, we're doing the same propaganda for Kyle. Every time there's a new point guard, we're like, there's a bit of Kyle in him. There's a bit of Kyle in Fred. There's a bit of Kyle in Malachi. And so, like, it's getting to that point. Of course, the fan base, there's, like, an undying love for the guy as well. And I think that does matter in a way. I think, obviously, with Kyle, like, I think the money and the years are important. But if the Raptors are cool with the money and if they have a team that's, like, somewhat competitive, I think Kyle's going to be, you know, cool with that, which is something I said in Run It Back, which you can watch this week.
Yeah, it's probably, if you're watching on YouTube, it's probably like right here. It's like in right the related link video right now. Or at the bottom. If you go to the recommended videos, it's probably the first one. So give us a click on that and just different outfits, you know. Will's got a different kit on in the other one.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, so I mean, I think, to be honest, I'm less worried about Kyle. I think really that's the organizational decision. And I think Masai was asked about Kyle's future, and you know, Masai did kind of talk about pivoting to a younger group, and I don't know necessarily he was saying that to justify the resting at the end of the season, or if he was saying that because he's trying to hint at the fact that the Raptors are going to move on from Kyle. I don't know, man. Okay, so you know, what do you think of the relationship there? I think you know, in terms of would it be most prudent for the Raptors to get someone else using that money, or just giving that to Kyle?
I think if Kyle wants to come back, and you know, it's at a price, you know, he's obviously going to name a price. I'm assuming he wants like around like what I think around the trade deadline was reported. He wanted like 25 mil a year,
yeah,
over 2 years, like maybe 2 years, 50. You know, I think if he wants to come back and that's the price, you know, you kind of owe it to the organization and just the team to bring him back. You know, I don't feel like you're giving him some kind of like honorary contract where he's going to be a detriment to the team, right? Like you talk about not just the off-court value, but, you know, he was still really good on the court. Like he's not prime Kyle Lowry anymore, but he can still orchestrate those games like against Brooklyn and the Lakers.
But like how close is he to prime Kyle Lowry? Like are we talking like is he 80% of prime Kyle Lowry? Is he like 75%? Like I wouldn't say he's any lower than 80, to be honest. I thought he was really
good. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. No, I think I would say like 75 to 80. I just think, you know, at some point, I guess you have to factor in, like, I know you've done those basketball reference. You know,
oh, I know. Kyle's already exceeded that. But I think at this point, it's like the fact that people are taking so many threes and the fact that, like, look at Kyle Lowry's, like, fitness regimen and everything like that. Like,
yeah,
he hasn't shown any signs yet. So I think we just need to reconsider our concept of aging for, like, these pro athletes.
No, I think that's fair. And I think his basketball IQ, too, alone is just going to make him valuable still, even if the physical skills deteriorate. So I guess, like, no, to answer your question, you know, I think if Kyle wants to come back, they should bring him back. And I know we're going to talk about the roster after, but assuming they don't make like huge changes, the roster is actually kind of locked in terms of the top guys. You know, assuming if they bring back Ken Birch and Gary Trent Jr., you pretty much have your top seven locked up. I mean, that depends on whether you like the top seven or not.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you like that top seven?
I mean, that's the thing, though. If Kyle leaves, like, what are you doing with that money? Like, are you just, you might just roll over some of that space into 2022, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I said this on Running Back. Wow, we should have, we'll do different topics soon. We'll do different topics. but I said, like, I think that's the best player the Raptors can spend with that amount of money is on Kyle Lowry. And, you know, they can pivot elsewhere, you know, like they can look to adjust other positions and go younger, but I think, yeah, in terms of bang for your buck, even for Kyle at 25 million, you know, 20-ish million, whatever it is, like, you know, that's something that he's going to meet the value of. But I think, you know, I guess the bigger question is like, so, you know, Masai also obviously spoke at length and sort of, you know, he made his point, obviously, that the Raptors are, you know, looking for championships. Like, this is all about championships. He literally looked you and me in the eye and said, everyone's forgotten about what happened 2 years ago.
To which point,
like, I feel attacked, honestly. He's like,
No, listen. I felt attacked when he was like, play in for what? Like, you know, he basically called me pathetic, for checking the standings the last 2 months and wanting the Raptors to get the 10th seed. But like, no, you're right. Like, it's funny too, when I think about Masai, like, I know he's obviously been here for like almost a decade, but like, he inherited a lot of things when he came here. Yep. In terms of the team, right? Like, he inherited Dwayne Casey. You know, he inherited, you know, most of the roster that ended up being the core. And he obviously made all these trades and brought in all these guys. But, like, he stuck with Dwayne for all those years. The first time he got to pick a head coach was the Nick Nurse year. And, you know, obviously he traded for Kawhi. Technically,
Nick was already here. I mean, he was technically hired by Brian Colangelo.
No, it's true. I mean, yeah, remember
I don't want to be that kind of guy.
Yeah. No.
You know, delete that footage. I definitely never said that. Definitely never said Nick Nurse looks like Albert Brenneman from.
Okay, this is not a Kwame Brown situation, all right?
I like Nick. No, but come on the podcast, please. All right, keep going.
But like, this is really, I think the challenge for Masai that he's like excited about is like, he really gets to build this team. Not like from the bottom up. I mean, they have talent on this team, but they do have to rebuild it. And I think that's exciting to Masai too, but that's why it kind of goes hand in hand with the other stuff that he said. Like, he needs to know that ownership is committed. he needs to know all of these other demands that he didn't list out specifically of, you know, making sure that the Raptors operate and are considered one of the top organizations in the league. And I think it's interesting that he challenged that point of view from like two sides, the NBA and his own ownership group, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know what the specifics are. Like, we all know, like, it's famously documented now. Like, when Masai came here, he had this, like, list of things that he wanted, right? He wanted a G League. He wanted an all-star game. He wanted a practice facility. So it just sounds like Masai has a new list this time. And maybe it's not more concrete things like that, but it's just more in the way that he wants the Raptors to operate.
Yeah, which I'm happy with, honestly. Like, I think that... That's the thing. When you hear Masai talk about these things, right? It's like, yo, this is awesome. We like a guy with this much passion. The thing is, he also means all these things. So like, it's like, you know, to you and I, we're like, oh yeah, you know, Masai wants to turn, you know, the Raptors brand into the next, you know, Manchester United brand.
Yeah, but he's not bullshitting.
No, he's serious. Yeah. He wants to see me in a Raptors jersey, not in this Liverpool kit from 2 years ago. Shout out. But like, he's really serious about that. So like, I think it takes a bit of creativity and like, it takes a vision to sort of like imagine that brand as something bigger. And I think that that's what you pay leadership for, is to envision the next step before it happens. I think, you know, to be honest, in the realm of, in the scope of like what is already happening, people have a good sense of like how to execute that. You can sort of get that done. You can refer to people who have done it in the past. You sort of copy models. You can get that done. Masai said himself, this is a copycat league. He's not trying to copy anybody. And he has this vision. And I think that's the price of leadership, is that vision to imagine what is the next thing? How do we get to it? How do we reach it? And how do we make sure we get that? And I think that, you know, I'm sure whatever demands Masai has, like, I think that it'd be very wise for people to sort of heed that. But I mean, even before we get to that though, like, do you think it's a point where after watching this year, like, do you feel like the team should be pivoting towards more of a rebuild kind of situation? That doesn't mean like tank like 6-7 years like Sam Hinkie, but just like a rebuild situation, or are they trying to sort of still be as competitive as possible? Because I think that those things might not necessarily be mutually exclusive, but it does lead you, in terms of how you make that choice, into making a decision on Kyle, for example.
Yeah, you know, I think that's kind of tough for the Raptors, just because you do have the core of Fred, Pascal, and OG locked in to an extent. And that's really the core that you kind of believe in. So if you're talking about rebuilding, even if it's not fully tearing it down, but like maybe shifting the focus to more young players, maybe taking a few steps back still the next couple of seasons to kind of build up the talent base again, then what do you do with those three guys, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to make a case for moving any of the three, you know? Like they're so valuable to the team. I don't see it yet.
Until they for sure hit their ceiling and there's for sure a great trade that puts them over the top, I don't really see the need or even the desire to move them right now.
That's the problem. It's like, you know, like most teams, especially like the super teams, like you look at Brooklyn, right? Like they get their three guys, and your problem is like filling out the rest of the roster, right? Like getting a Blake Griffin and Jeff Green. So you're kind of like, I don't know, like you're going like inside out in a way. Like you get your superstars first, then you fill out the rest. The Raptors are the opposite. Yep. Like they have the perfect guys to complement a superstar. Like maybe not too many guys, but like you look at those three, right? Mm-hmm. Like we've seen two of the three do it on a championship stage, and we've seen what OG can do in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's a weird spot for the Raptors, because you want to say like, yes, like all they need to do is get a star, but there's just no path to getting that player right now. And at the same time, if you want to put those three on the trade market, you know, separately or package them with the lottery pick, like you're right. Like, what are you going to get? Right. Like, I feel like it's just going to be like a lateral move. Like if you package a player and a pick, like who's really out there. So I don't know. It's tough. I feel like they just got to roll with this roster, you know, add the lottery pick, and just continue kind of replenishing the roster, because at some point, you know, if guys like a Malachi Flynn and, you know, Jalen Harris and like the lottery pick that comes in, and you start building up that talent base again, you've got all your draft picks. I think Masai just wants to put himself in a position where he can try to make that, you know, not a Kawhi Leonard trade again, because that feels like a once in a lifetime type opportunity that kind of worked out, but like get himself in the position where the Raptors our players in that way. But at the end of the day, like, even after the championship, like, the Raptors still haven't landed a huge free agent. Like, there hasn't been a superstar free agent that has said, I want to come here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And until that happens, you know, that's always the clearest path, that in the lottery, to getting the star. So, you know, I do feel like the Raptors are kind of not stuck with the roster that they have, but I feel like that's the easiest path for them right now. And it's frustrating because feel like winning the championship makes a lot of the fan base just expect to be able to get back to that level kind of, you know, with one move.
Yeah, which, you know, that's not possible. Like, it just isn't. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is somewhat possible if you have, like, one of these, like, superstar who are, like, you know, in free agency and you have, like, all the money in the world and you're a destination market and they want to come to you, then, yeah, maybe you can kind of have an instant, like, Brooklyn situation or an instant Miami situation. That doesn't happen, though, right? That just doesn't happen. And the reality is most championship teams take a long time to sort of build to that point. Even the Lakers, for example, they took a very long time to build to that point because they needed to get all that trade capital to even acquire the second half of the championship, which was AD, right? Like, that took a lot of lottery picks and things like that to get, in addition to LeBron wanting to come. So, yeah, it's I think the Raptors have a path to building a championship. The blueprint they're following is their own. Like, it's going to be the same kind of deal, and it's going to be building from the middle. So I think on that front, I think the Raptors have a pretty good sense of what they want to do. I think Masai's probably bigger, you know, thing is sort of like, how do you get the brand to be bigger? And that's an open question that maybe we can think about in the future. But yeah, in the meantime, though, I did find one piece really interesting on Masai. I think Dave Feschuk at the Toronto Star has a really close connection with Masai, and, like, you know, whenever he writes about Masai, there's always a lot of things in there. And I did find some things kind of interesting in there, right? So, you know, he says, sources will tell you that it's likely a long list as to what Masai wants, including a renewed commitment from MLSC, the Giants of Africa, a continued commitment from ownership to spend into the NBA's luxury tax in pursuit of a championship, and assurance that Ujiri will have unequivocal support from MLSC and their board of directors on any number of matters. Now, of course, that becomes a question is who, you know, the thing with MLSC is that, like, it's not just you convince one guy and it's all good, right? It's really a board. And, you know, because obviously there's the Rogers side, there's the Bell side, there's the MLSC side. He has Larry Tannenbaum. And I think Masai in this press conference was very, very vocal about the fact that he has Larry. He's name dropped Larry two or three times. And he said specifically, me and Larry are good. Almost like, okay, I'm clearing him, right? But the thing is, there's two more heads that he kind of has to sort of clear there. The thing is, I don't want to pretend like I'm sort of like some MLSC expert. I'm definitely not. I don't even really fully understand this thing. But there is the CEO, which is Michael Frisdale, and he's got a very awkward history. And I'll just quote Dave Feschuk here. CEO Michael Frisdale is in many ways an anti-Lywicki, a non-existent public presence at the very least, whose lamentable background in apartheid-era South African tourism can make for awkward Zooms. And of course, and what, you know, what about Edward Rogers, the scion of the eponymous corporation that owns 37.5% of the operation? Folks who run the Blue Jays rave about Rogers' commitment to excellence, which is a plus, but let's just assume that the Rogers family's secret recent Instagram snap alongside Donald Trump wouldn't have escaped the attention of Ujiri, who has more than once spoken out against Trump's divisiveness. So, you know, I don't know. Like, this is the thing. When you're dealing with, like, people at the very, very, very high tops, like, it's obviously Masai's not going to come out and say these things, but it does sound to me like there are some hurdles in terms of, like, do you have their unequivocal support? Because I think it's about more than Larry in that front. But, you know, I don't know, man. I think at the end of the day, I think money talks, right? And Masai has been
I think money talks so much. Also, like, and I think, like, Masai will probably get to dictate the terms of, like, who he reports to and how the workflow works. You know, I think, honestly, the most encouraging thing that came out of the Masai thing, like, when you hear him talk and you know that he has these lists of demands, like, for the whole year now, or the last 2 years when we've been speculating, it has been, you know, is there anything left here to challenge him? You know, he's won the championship. You know, he's gotten to the top. And people always talk about maybe he'll do things outside of basketball. You know, maybe he'll take a bigger role with Giants of Africa and try to build that into something bigger. For me, that's the most encouraging sign from that interview is, like, Masai does see a lot of challenges left here in Toronto. Yeah, and he seems so motivated to, like, you don't, if you're leaving or if you actually want to leave, I don't think you sit there, especially a genuine guy like Masai, and talk about your desire to win another championship here in Toronto. Because remember at the trade deadline, you know, he said something that was really ominous when he was like, oh, don't worry, even if I'm not here, the Raptors will always be fine, right? And I think at the time that, you know, some people could have taken that as, oh, you know, he's leaning towards leaving. But you watch an interview like he did this week, and it's like, he knows exactly what he wants to do with this franchise, and he still has visions. And like you said, he still has things that he wants to do to build the brand of the Raptors. So, you know, listen, man, you look at any ownership group around the league. We don't need to like drop names, but like you research all these ownerships, there's going to be these political divides right now, yeah. You know, a lot of these ownerships. And that's why a lot of times we were like, yo, Masai's never going to go to New York because of James Dolan, right? Because when you look at James Dolan's history of even just like dealing with his own employees. So I think those are things, yes, that Masai has to work through. But I don't, you know, I don't feel like that's something that's going to end up stopping him from coming back. You know, they're going to have to work it out because MLSE is basically just going to say yes to whatever Masai does. Like, he's won you a championship. And, yo, like, the Raptors franchise is where they are because of Masai.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think my ultimate prediction is still Masai comes back. I think something would really have
to, I think it would have to go something like really terrible.
Yeah. Which you just never know. That's the thing.
You don't know.
Never know, man.
And you know, Masai's a real emotional guy too, right? So who knows? Maybe one bad meeting or, you know, something he doesn't like would motivate him the other way to walk away is the thing, right?
Yeah.
This is the man with all the leverage in the world, man.
No, he really does have incredible leverage right now. And I think in retrospect, it makes complete sense that he left at this point, because why would you not negotiate from the position you have the absolute most leverage? And again, you know, for people who, I was joking about this, like for people who watch that presser, which you obviously have to go and watch, but like if you, it just imagine you're another GM trying to negotiate with Masai. Masai's giving you that version of that presser straight to your ear through a BlackBerry passport for 40 minutes a day for like a week or a month or a year. And eventually you're like, fine, I'll give you $5 million in addition to Kawhi Leonard for this. You know what I mean? Like, fine. You can have a free title. There you go.
He probably told Philly, Miami, and the Lakers like at trade deadline. He's like, I'm not going to just take your offer at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And none of them took him seriously.
Yeah.
Like, Miami really
got Victor Oladipo, man. That's unbelievable, man.
Yo, don't forget they got a Bielitsa too from the Kings.
Oh yeah, you know what? I think many people do forget that, because I was watching the Heat game the other day and I was like, "Yo, who is that?" Yo, and honestly, they didn't show the jersey for like a long time, and I really spent 5 minutes of the game, and I was like, "Oh yeah."
No, their core, their supporting group is like super wash. They got Trevor Ariza and Iguodala.
Yeah, that's pretty unbelievable. I'm surprised they didn't get PJ Tucker as well. That feels like that's like the holy trinity of like washed wing stoppers. Oh, man. Oh, man. What was James Posey, man? Come on, man.
Man.
Yeah.
I watched basketball before. You definitely didn't. No, we got to do the react pod on that Chris Childs game. Have you ever watched that game?
No.
The Pistons Raptors game 5?
I'm not going to lie to you. The only footage of Chris Childs I've seen is him punching Kobe.
Oh, yeah. That's the one. That's the one most of your generation knows him by. No. You gotta do a throwback react pod to Chris Childs tossing up a 2-point shot when they were down 3 with 5 seconds left in a deciding game 5 against Jerry Stackhouse, former Raptors 905 coach Jerry Stackhouse and the Detroit Pistons. It's a great series, man.
All right, I will do my best to find that video, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to be tough.
You're going to have to buy a VCR player.
I was going to say, man, do you have footage of this? Because I might need it directly. I might be Nick Nurse shipping in VHS tapes of Phil Jackson running the triangle from Germany to Birmingham.
Man. Yo, Nick Nurse's all-time winningest percentage as head coach took a huge hit this year, man.
Yo, you know... You know, it is what it is. It's unfortunate. But, what I mean, to be honest, like, how do you think Knicks handled the end of this season? Because, you know, he probably is like, as with every coach, right? You're spending so many hours like grinding, watching tape, watching like five games ahead, scouting, you know, having meetings about it, discussing strategy. And then the front office is like, yeah, so you have six players today and Aaron Baines is playing small forward, buddy. Go ahead. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you think Nick was like, yo, I don't care. I'm not scouting Indiana. Like, I refuse. I need load management.
I know Nick earlier in the year have a presser where he got a little bit frustrated about his roster. I remember him saying something about just like, yo, these are the guys that I have. Like, you know, like there's a
roster. And this is a man who coached in England, bro. This man was definitely coaching accountants in England. And he's like, yo, how do I have the same roster right now?
Actually, the funny thing for me, you know, I think it was a really frustrating season for Nick as well. Like Nick's used to winning, man.
Yeah.
Like it's not easy. Also, it's not easy when you can look down the bench and like, you know, tell Kawhi and Mark to check in.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, you're kind of looking at your options. And there's not
Aaron,
a lot
there.
And it's
Aaron Baines and Stanley Johnson.
Yeah. But like, I mean, I guess that's part of why the Raptors hire Nick too, you know, not just to guide them to a championship, but he seems like the guy that would be most adaptable to kind of these situations and these changing rosters. Right. But I don't know, man, I've never seen him argue with refs as much as I did this season.
Yeah.
Like,
then halfway through the year, he stopped though.
He chilled out for a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. I got a lot of questions about this Raptors season. It's just like, obviously, they rested guys down the stretch, and Kyle got the majority of the rest. I was like, if you're gonna rest, why don't you rest Fred and Pascal? Like, these guys literally came back from COVID and have been talking about being out of breath and you know, struggling. Like, I don't know. I'm not questioning them. I'm just saying, like, obviously, probably maybe the guys decided for themselves. You know, I'm sure it was a collaborative effort.
Probably,
you know,
yeah.
It wasn't like they just told them, like, you know, you're not playing tonight. Like, they definitely worked with them on it. But I don't know. I just feel like if they were going to shut it down, then you should have just shut it all down. Because, I don't know. They after they beat the Lakers, they were still very much in it. And if they had beaten the Clippers, and again, I know this was all just to get in the play-in tournament. But, you know, I don't know. It just... Just a messed up year, man. Every year there's a couple of teams that end up in this middle, you know, of not being at the very bottom or the very top. And unfortunately, the Raptors got stuck in that spot this year.
Yeah. No, I mean, the hope is that it's just a temporary down year, but I think that is to be seen. And what they decide in the offseason is going to be pretty big. It's a pretty big offseason. And again, just get Masai done, you know. Like, you know, listen, Masai said he's going to Africa after this. Like, listen, you got to... You know, maybe before his flight, you know, departs, maybe you got to pull like a Ross and Rachel situation. I know you know what that's like.
Well, what's going on? Friends is coming back, by the way. Huh? They're doing a reunion episode.
I'm good.
On Netflix. It's a big deal. Yeah.
I'm good. But no, I mean, I was kidding. I thought you were a huge Friends fan, but I guess you
don't. No. I mean, I can pretend I can do a Central Perk backdrop if you want. You know?
Wow. See? So you are a Friends fan. No, I mean, I don't know, man. There's like Rachel, like, was gonna leave for a great career in Paris, but then decided to like stick around for Ross, who's like super mediocre.
So Rachel's Masai and Ross is MLSE.
Yeah, basically.
Ross is Larry Tannenbaum.
Oh man, yo! By the way, Larry Tannenbaum's 75. Man, that guy looks pretty good for 75.
Damn. All right, we're evaluating Larry Tannenbaum.
Yeah, okay. Let's move on to the player grades. We don't need to
come on,
evaluate his fitness.
Come on, man. Down horrendously right now.
No, listen, man. I'm about to ask you for Alex Len's season grade. So now we'll start at the very top and we'll move our way down. So what we're going to do is we're going to give them player grades, me and Alex, and then afterwards we are going to decide if we're going to keep them or cut them. All right. I'm sure the Raptors front office have already done a similar exercise, probably in much more greater depth than two people.
Yeah, certain players have already been cut. Certain players were already cut in their minds for the last couple months. But anyways.
Yeah, fair. Everybody who played the last six games. No, I'm kidding. anyway, let's start at the very top. Kyle Lowry, man. I'm going to give Kyle a B+ for this season. You know, I think one thing that was a little worrisome was that in a lot of these games that Kyle played, the Raptors record was actually not that great. But I do think that the way he kind of stepped up for the team when they were super, super down with COVID, right? Like they had one coach, he was the guy out there with him and Norm. There's multiple games where he stepped up in that front. He had like a 20 assist or 18 assist game against the Celtics, and all he was running was pick and pops with like Chris Boucher and Baines. Like, you know, I'm giving a B+. Of course he sat the rest of the year. So that's a bit of a thing too, but you know, I think a B plus is solid. What do
yeah,
you think, Kyle?
I'll give him like a B. You know, I think it's not his fault, but I do have to penalize him for like the availability. You know, that was obviously, you know, in conjunction with the team, but you play like what, 9 games after the trade deadline. So, you know, so I'll bump his grade down a little bit. And, you know, we were talking earlier about how like, oh, this is like 75-80% of Kyle's prime. The one thing that did stand out to me was like when he did play like second nights of back-to-back, you could tell that he wasn't kind of the same player. So that's kind of where you start to see, you know, the age and, you know, the decline there. But yeah, like you said, man, I think they were like, what, at some point they won like 13 in a row without Kyle or something across 2 seasons or some wild stat. But like,
yeah, it was like 16.
Yeah. But like, Kyle's the biggest ceiling raiser on this team, right? Like you don't beat the Lakers. You don't beat Brooklyn. You don't have those wins without Kyle. And he's just a year removed from having an amazing playoff series against Boston.
How was your own performance on back-to-backs? Did age impact those?
yeah. So like, I struggle just in single games, man. You know, you know what is wild? Because I know you know this too, but this was tough. And I know we're not going to complain, like covering basketball from home, but like there were not a lot of off days this year. Like, do you know how few times, every time there was actually 2 days between games, it was so rare.
Yep.
And I actually felt like it was a huge break whenever that happened because, and obviously I can't imagine what it was like for the players, like dealing in that environment. But like, this was a very condensed schedule, and combined with the fact that the Raptors were terrible, it was just not enjoyable this season.
I agree. No, there were like 2 weeks where they had 5 games in a week, which like, come on, man, that's too much. It's too much. But I think maybe I'm giving Kyle a little bit more generous grade because I'm the last memory of Kyle is that 37-point game, and it was so outrageous. I mean, to be honest, a very loyal listener to the podcast went through and actually counted all the stars that were given out on the reaction podcast. And I'm not saying that that's the ultimate way to rank the team, but Kyle got like a star in like 40% of the games, which is by far the highest share of anybody on the team. So, you know. Kyle Anderson is getting the B+ here. Okay, Fred VanVleet. What's Fred VanVleet getting from you? I'm going to say Fred VanVleet is also a B+ in my books. I would say he was at an A level for the first half of the season. And then post-COVID, it's very hard to evaluate. But he did have a number of inefficient games. I mean, again, I think that is mostly fitness related. But I think on the whole, he was still a B+ for the year. If you look at the impact metrics, Fred was actually the biggest driver of wins this season. So I'm curious to hear from you. Is Fred, what's Fred getting from Dr. Wong?
Wow. My dad's probably going to watch this and be like, what's going on? Why is running back 97 minutes this week? Why is there 2 episodes?
That's optimistic, man.
Yeah. I'm going to give Fred A-. You know, I actually don't want to penalize him for COVID, to be honest.
Fair.
You know, I think obviously it did impact his performance. But, you know, the Fred I'll remember is the 54-point game, you know, ripping the ball from Giannis, you know, sizing up Giannis and getting to the hoop and finishing. Feel like those plays are actually really symbolic of, like, how far Fred has come. You know, even as recently as, like, last season, it was a question of should Fred start? You know, can you play Fred in a big playoff series? Or, you know, is he going to be at a height disadvantage and have a series like he did against Philly 2 years ago? So you even think about how far he's come since then. You know, he's obviously, like we talked about, established himself as the voice of the team. You know, Fred's one of the highlights of the season, man. I know we'll get to OG, but like Fred and OG, like those were the clear highlights of the season for me. So, you know, I think Fred took a huge step this year in terms of just establishing himself as like a leader of this team, which is kind of wild to think about because he's really not that old.
Yeah, I was going to say, I outright asked him in one press conference. I was like, yo, you're 2 years younger than me. How are you so wise? And he was like, he's like, bro, you're such a fan of this team. Stop asking questions, man. I love when I pretend to be a journalist. It's actually really funny. No, sometimes I watch it back and I'm like, who is this guy? I'm literally the guy through the Osmos commercial, man.
No, if the Masai Zoom is available, everybody, you know, from earlier this week, everybody should go towards the end, you know, when Will ask Masai a question. Voice is a little shaky there. No, I think Will was wiping away a little bit of tears too after Masai's emotions.
That might be the first question I've ever asked Masai. So I don't know. I think the Zoom format makes it a little bit easier. It's a lot harder when you're in a scrum or if you're like sitting and all these people around you and stuff like that to raise your voice.
It's definitely more organized.
It's way more organized. I actually really do appreciate that. But to your point about Fred, I mean, pre-COVID, obviously we know the three-point shot is his most effective weapon. Pre-COVID, shot 38.3% from three on 8.8 attempts per game. It's in 34 games. Post-COVID, he shot 33% on 10 threes a game. So what that tells you is he's not getting to rim as much, and he was just also not – the legs weren't in the shot in the same way. And I feel like, yeah, hopefully, you know, with the full offseason, things like this, that he can recover. But you know what? Honestly, you've talked me into it. I'm bumping him up to an A- as well. This is why you have parent-teacher interviews, man, because,
this,
you know,
this your is parents why, this can is come why in I'm and here,
influence
bro.
The grade. This is what Asian parents do at every – parent-teacher interview. They just try to hustle the teacher for better grades.
Or if you had me as your TA, as your teacher assistant in university, you know, just, you know, wow. Come argue your grades. No, shouts to Fred, man. A great contract too, you know. I know that was a pretty big number that they gave him last season, but, you know, you don't hear anyone complaining about it.
Yep. Also, you know, just, again, the fact that he held Steph Curry to two made field goals for 40 minutes. I obviously he got a lot of help, but 40 minutes, Steph had two field goals. You know, that, you know, Fred's defense is insane. Pascal Siakam, I'm giving Pascal a B+. I just continuing my theme of B+s here. I wouldn't say that it's an A performance in this year. To be honest, it's closer to a B than it is to a B+. But I will say that, you know what? Actually, I'm going to give it a B. Forget it. I'm going to give him a B. And maybe you could talk me up into it. But I just think that, like, there were obviously very prominent moments where he sort of came up short. And I'm also docking the grade because he went at Nick Nurse. And unfortunately, this is a Nick Nurse stan account. So I'm going to give Pascal a B. And Nick Nurse, again, please come on the podcast. Thank you.
Really trying to get him on the pod.
I'm trying,
man. I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen. No, I'm going to give him – I don't want to give him a B-. The team's too hard. I'll give him a B. You know, I think – it's weird because I feel like a part of me is always defending Pascal just because there's just such a segment, I feel like, of the fan base and even just the general basketball watching audience that has turned Pascal into kind of this meme and this joke, right? You know, the guy who just spins all the time and, like, you know, misses all these shots at the buzzer. But, you know, if it's weird because, like, I feel like it's two things with Pascal. There's, like, the eye test and then there's, like, you look at the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Numbers look great. You know, the numbers actually look great, but then can we ignore the fact that, you know, a lot of the struggles did come down the stretch, right? And also, can we ignore the fact, and I don't know if you agree with me, but, like, there's some nights where Pascal just kind of doesn't have that same intensity, or there's not, like, this, I feel like he hasn't established kind of this baseline.
Yeah, I agree with you.
What he brings with you on it. And I feel like, and I don't want to harp on the contract, the $30 million, you know, he earned that, you know, coming off the championship, and he's a super valuable player. And I don't think we should always judge a player based on the size of their contract, like whether he's making 15 or 30. You know, it does make a difference in the team building. But, like, I feel like if you're getting paid that and you're expected to be the number one guy or the 1A guy on a really good team, I need to know that you're just going to bring a certain kind of level of play every night. And I feel like that's what's missing from Pascal. That is more concerning to me than the fourth quarter stuff, because some of that is just – I feel it's like roster construction.
Luck. Some of it is also bad just luck bad luck. He missed a layup. Remember the Timberwolves game where the Raptors fought back and it was like 80-80?
Yeah.
And then he got a layup and he missed.
No, the most famous ones was like the Portland and Golden State back-to-back, right? At the start of the year on the road trip.
But again, that's bad luck because he got the post up of Robert Covington and he missed. Yeah. It's fine.
The thing for me is the consistency.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the consistency is a great point. I think, yeah, from a star player like perspective, you just need to bring it every single night. And there were notable nights where I think he just wasn't there. But I think on the overall, like, he did have a pretty productive season. I think he did improve. His assists were up. His turnovers were down. I think the three-point shot obviously is concerning. But, you know, I mean, really it's just the one thing I would like to see is the consistency, both, like, in terms of his, like, play on the court, but also his mentality, right? Because I think one thing with Fred is, like, part of leadership is, like, you're just consistently that guy. You're leading the team. You know, you're into the game. You're competing. You're doing whatever you can. And I'm not saying Pascal's not doing that, but I'm saying that there's, like, this, like, leadership element from Fred that really sort of distinguishes him, which probably gives him a better grade in a sense than Pascal, even though Pascal had better numbers than Fred did overall. But yeah, it's a B season. Let's be real. OG Anunoby. So he only played 43 games, which is probably the biggest thing to knock against this game. But I think I'm giving him an A and feeling pretty comfortable about it, especially in his role. He did really well, and he showed some expansion towards the end of the year.
Damn, yo, I should teach, man. I'll pass everybody. I'll give him A plus, man.
A plus? Honestly, okay.
Yeah. All right. I mean, what's the complaint? You know, what's the complaint about OG? You know,
he got hurt twice, and it's not his fault, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, I feel like that's, you know, it's like an incomplete portion of the grade.
No, it's like attendance. It's like participation. This guy's docking him for participation.
No, I'm that teacher. That's correct. Yeah, he actually missed. He didn't spell out his full first name on the test. So I'm gonna give him a minus 0.5.
I punted the 10% participation grade in every class in university. I was like, I'm not going to class.
You did that. Well,
I've been working from home since I was 16. I give him an A plus, man. You know, I feel like the development has continued. You know, I think it was Zach Lowe who called him the best perimeter, like said that the argument is there to that OG is the best, already the best perimeter defender in the NBA. And you see the way that he's able to lock down guys and, like, man, just like guard different positions, whether it's Jokic or some of the perimeter guys, like he's ridiculous. And like one of the best parts about the Norman Powell trade next to the Players Tribune essay was, you know, they bumped OG's usage up on the offensive end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know, you have the numbers. Like, I don't think the efficiency slipped that much.
No, not
and,
really.
And, you know,
no.
And you know, he legit was like a 20-plus point scorer on a nightly basis. And if somebody told you that 2 years ago or a year ago, you wouldn't have believed that. So we always said, like, oh, anything on offense from OG is a bonus. But now I feel like we got to raise that ceiling a little bit. And, you know, having him turn into not like a top 10 player in the league, but having him take that jump actually, I think, is the most important. Like, he's the key, I feel like, to where the Raptors need to go. Because if he does make that extra jump, I think that changes the trajectory of this team.
Yeah, absolutely. To your point, so in the 3 months before he got, Norm got traded, right, in December, January, and February, OG's usage rate was 14% in December, 17% in January, and 18% in February. Once Norm got dealt, that moved up to 22% in March. Obviously, there was some crossover there. Norm didn't get dealt until later in March, but 23% in April. And I think the biggest thing is that he bumped his scoring from about, you know, 11 points, you know, 16 points, 11 points per month to 18 points, 18 points, and 17 points in the last 3 months. And I think that there was a tangible escalation in sort of the way he was being used. I think it was interesting seeing him run some of Norm's plays. Not all of them are going to work for him, but, you know, might as well try it out. And I think some things he did really well. I thought he obviously showed a lot of confidence in his shot, which has really improved. He's doubled his shot volume. And, you know, defensively, he's still as great as ever. That's the one thing you're concerned about is when you get to that point where you're, like, you know, really being used on offense, how much you have left in the tank for defense. And OG still was, you know, clamps on that end. And so really, I'm just, wow, I can't believe I'm one of these teachers. I'm going to give him an A only because he missed, you know, time in the season. But I got to say, even when he came back from the missed time, like, he was really, really good. So shout out OG, man. This is definitely the highest grade we'll give him the season. Okay, Ken Birch. So he joined the team midseason, was honestly as good as you could probably hope for, because the fact that he was in Orlando in a totally different role, but he was averaging 5 points, 5 rebounds. And he comes to Toronto, he bumps his scoring to 12 points, 7.6 rebounds, 1.2 assists, 1.2 blocks. He basically came in and gave you a prime Serge Ibaka stat line. What are you giving Ken Birch for his half a season here?
I'll give him a B+.
A B plus?
Should I go higher?
I'm giving him an A for his role. Okay. I mean, obviously it's like, he can't play more games, but he did play out all the games, even at the end of the season when they're resting everybody.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I'll give him A- then. You see how easy it is to convince me? But, like, yeah, I think we're getting into the group of players where we need to be a little bit careful, too. You know, I'm not taking away from anything Kem did, but I think part of that, too, there's a small part of that where we're comparing it to what we were seeing at the start of the season from the center rotation.
Okay.
So, you know, for him to come in and perform like that, he did look great. with the starting five, you know, the five that, you know, when they didn't rest. And, you know, I think, you know, Pascal next to Aaron Baines was just really tough to watch.
Oh, my goodness. So... I remember asking in the two times that Aaron Baines spoke this season, I remember asking him, you know, back in December, I was like, so, you know, the three-point shot for you hasn't really translated yet, but we know you can shoot that shot. You know, when you're working with Pascal and stuff, like, has that changed your role? Do you got to space the floor more? And I feel like the only reason I asked that was I was trying to tell them, like, yo, stop being in the lane. But
no, seriously, though. Yeah, no, yeah, and even like Kyle being able to just run pick and roll with the center, you know, that was really refreshing to see. But again, I feel like some of that we do have to, you know, remember it's kind of reactionary. Like, but you know, I definitely want Kem back. You know, we'll bump him up to the A-, because he also brought you know, his mom, Wendy's Courtside Moms podcast, you know, into the Raptors world. And great episode with Marie Holloway, Kyle's mom. Everybody should definitely check that out. But like, yeah, A-, man. But this starts getting into the territory of, you know, assuming they bring Kem back and he's the starting center next season. It's like, are you happy with this? I guess you would. I guess you are for now, right?
I think I am for now, for sure. And I think that, again, to put Kem's numbers in perspective, he averaged 12 points, 7.6 rebounds, 2 assists, shot 55% from the field. Serge Ibaka, you know, again, this is the most direct comparison, but like in his championship season, 18-19, 15 points per game for Serge, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, you know, 1.4 blocks, 53% from the field. Serge obviously shot the 3 more and definitely shot more jumpers, but like we're talking about comparable production, which is pretty wild considering we just got him at, you know,
yeah, and just then, like, I don't know. I never watched that much Orlando Magic games unless I was forced to, but like, I never saw him as like, as an interesting player there. Like, I was actually really surprised after he came here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I knew he was a good defender and I knew he, you know, was definitely playing out of position at power forward. I don't think that's his natural place, but no, he instantly clicked. And I think it's really just like, I think the Raptors four perimeter starters, whether that's Kyle, Fred, you know, OG and Pascal, like those four guys, like they create so much that it's not as hard for that fifth guy to produce. You can plug a lot of those guys in and have them do the job. That's part of the reasons why, like, it was really tough watching like Aaron Baines and Alex Len in that front. But Kem came in and showed that he fits really well. And yeah, I'm giving him an A for his role and for his time. He was an A here. Gary Trent Jr. joined the team midseason, obviously Norm getting traded. Gary Trent finished the year in 17 games the Raptors, averaging 16 points per game, 3.6 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 1.1 steals, shot 40% from the field and 36% from three. What are you giving Gary Trent? I'm giving him a B, and that's it. Just B.
Yeah, I'm giving him a B too. I was thinking B or B minus. You know, I think obviously – he came and like, oh man, like his first 10 games was just wild.
His first 10 games were A++, man. This guy.
Like plus, well, what did he have? Plus 50 or something? Plus 54?
Yes.
In one game?
Yes.
He had the game winner, obviously, the career highs, you know, that huge game in OKC, you know, just a breath of fresh air for the team. But then once, you know, the roster started getting shut down and you'd see him occasionally, you know, come off the bench and things like that. You know, sometimes he does strike you as a very one-dimensional player, right? Yep, the offensive end. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Again, he's a hard one to evaluate because he didn't get a lot of time with like the proper lineups and the proper players that you imagine he's going to be playing with going forward. So I'm actually kind of interested to see, number one, what his price is. Mm-hmm. I assume when they rested him that there was probably some kind of agreement already on a price. I don't know, maybe, but like, you know, I feel like I'm interested to see what they see him, you know, as whether it's a starter coming off the bench and also what his role is on offense, because I don't think he has as polished an offensive game as Norm, where he should be this kind of off the bench gunner. Like, you would want him to be more of a two-way guy and someone who maybe slots more into like the OG usage percentage, like the old OG user percentage on offense. So I don't know. I still have some questions about him in terms of how they're going to utilize him going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, depending on whether they bring Kyle back, it is it's going to be a big question as to whether he starts or not. But I will say his first 12 games after joining the team, he was starting on all of them, averaged 18 points per game, shot 43% from the field, shot 39% from three, you know, all those marks are quite efficient in his role, and he did that job quite well. And I have to say that, you know, Ken Birch wasn't even really integrated into the team at that point. I think that once you do have that dive threat going downhill towards the basket, there's maybe more opportunities for the shooters. So I don't mind him as a starter. I think the Raptors should re-sign him. And, you know, I think, you know, looking too much into the other stuff, I think, you know, obviously the inefficient games really suggest to you that he can't create the offense just yet. But I also have to say, like, yo, he doesn't even know the plays yet. Like, Nick Nurse said this multiple times. He said he probably knows like half the playbook. So, you know, I think it's always going to impact your efficiency if you don't really know the playbook. So I'm not going to be too hard on Gary here. Chris Boucher, honestly, for his role, I'm giving him an A as well. Wow, that's a lot of A's that I'm giving out here. But what are you giving Chris? Yeah. Cause honestly, because between the breakout season and the Mary Brown's commercial, like, that's the A for me.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, these grades make it sound like the Raptors won 50 games this season. What's going on?
All right, fine. What do you want? What should Chris's grade
be? No, it's fine. I'll give Chris an A-. You know, I'll roll with you. You know, I give Chris an A-. You know, it's so weird, man. These grades are so high.
I just don't want the smoke again. I'm sorry.
No, these grades are hilarious, man. These are the same grades we would give the Raptors after the championship.
All right, fine. You know what? I'm just gonna take all the grades and bump them down one full grade. I'm gonna do a bell curve at the end of the season, at the end of the podcast.
Yo, this is why I told you and Assad have the slander pod. When I come on, it's the pander pod.
No, it really is, man.
No, I'll give it A-. You know, I think it's interesting. Nick talked about kind of, you know, Chris's best position is playing the four. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't envision Chris playing center, and I think, you know, it makes sense, you know, especially on the defensive end, where I think it can be a little difficult for him at times. But, you know, I think Chris, for his development curve, you know, this is a great season for him. And, you know, I know we'll get into the other guys, but he's really one of the few bench guys where I'm like, yeah, you know, I can see him playing a permanent role going forward.
Okay, I just opened up his game log, and, you know, there were some very nice moments, but there are also like a long stretch of like empty moments. So I'm bumping this down to a B+ on the fly. And
all right, let's do it.
That's unfortunate. But yeah, you're going to go with B+ as well. Yeah, I mean, look, I think Chris's highs were as high as anybody else's on this season, which is pretty incredible, right? I don't think anyone expected that. And of course, he did scale his production up. He had to change positions as well, which I think was something that he did really well. I really enjoyed his time as a power forward. Even early in the season when he was playing with Alex Len, we were like, okay, this is how we solve the bench issue. And it's like, no. We're going to cut Alex Len and start Chris Boucher instead. But no, I think early in the season, his impact was phenomenal, especially as a bench guy. He was the only guy off the bench that produced well, which I do give him extra points for. But there were long stretches where, you know, he just didn't produce. Like, I'm looking at a game logs here, 2 points, 4 points, 7 points, 5 points, yeah. 18.
No, four, he was crazy 10, hot. 8. He was crazy hot to start the season.
Yeah.
And also I think he's probably left a better impression, because remember, like, at one point he was the only guy off the bench who could score more than 6 points.
That was the whole season. What do you mean? You remember?
No, well, yes. They had Norm. Well, yeah, I guess Norm started after.
Norm was giving you an inefficient 8 points, man. It was.
I can't believe we had so much depth that Norm couldn't even start at the start of the season. What a stacked roster.
Yeah. Well, we were starting Aaron Baines instead of Norm. So. Nick Nurse was like, yeah, I don't care. I don't need centers. I'm good. Just give me another guard.
This guy's going to give Aaron Baines a solid B.
That's what you really know.
That's how you know that's how you know this class is a fraud.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Damn. I'm really like, what's a course you took in university that was like a complete like easy mark for you? Like just like a history of music or something like that.
I don't even know. I forgot my electives. I don't know, man. I don't remember. Yeah.
This was like 20 years ago. Now, you know. So.
Yeah, it was 20 years ago. I do have my transcript somewhere because I was I went off the first couple of years and then I gave up. Yeah. Well, because I landed my first job 2 years in, but we don't need to talk about that.
Okay. Damn. The Sears years.
No, Ernst & Young, baby. We got to get the time.
Damn, right. What, you were at Ernst & Young at like 20?
Well, I did like an intern co-op there, and then they guarantee you the job, and then I basically like slacked off so hard in my third year that I almost failed my finance class. Like I just didn't go to class, and like I just thought I could wing it, and like I failed the midterm. I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And then the prof was like, anyone who failed the midterm, whatever grade you get on the final, that will just be your final grade.
Oh, I so, loved when I loved when profs did that, man. But then you get like mad pressure because like your final test is like worth 80% of your mark.
Yeah, yeah. No, your final test is literally just your grade.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's that. No, that's unbelievable. But
anyways, that's what we're here for.
All right. Well, who do I have next on the list? Freddie Gillespie. I'm going to give him a solid C. And this is the first C I have. I think obviously relative to his role, it's fine. I mean, I think Nick really likes him. He said a lot of nice things about Freddie Gillespie, and I think he'll probably stay. But I think after the first little bit, I think he was one of those guys where you're like, you know what? How good really is he? And I think offensively, that's not the way to judge him. I think it's more about rebounding and rim contests. And I think he did a decent job on that front, but he also just seemed kind of limited. Like in a lot of these late games, right? He was playing like 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes. And I'll say, you know, two center lineups, three center lineups, obviously you're not going to get the best looks. But like he's getting like four shots off in 30 minutes. That's a concern. So for me, I'm giving him a C. Honestly, if you want to put the Miley Cyrus thing as a C+, I'm cool with it. But, you know, it's, you know, yeah.
Let's go with the C. You know, I'm with you. You know, I think, you know, Freddie, great personality, you know, all of that stuff. You know, I thought it was really cool when Vivek asked him about, what was it, like the defensive schemes against the Knicks.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like asking Raptors PR if he could actually talk about that. Because this man's literally just trying to lock down an NBA job and he didn't want to mess anything up. Yeah, but you see where the curve is in terms of the skill development. Like on a really good team, Freddie would not play. No. So if the Raptors want to be a really good team, and you know his contract's not guaranteed for next season, but like he would be a 10th, 11th, 12th guy, or maybe be in the 905.
Yeah, I think so. He just needs a lot more skill development, as you mentioned. I did like the defense. He had some very, very emphatic blocks. Cousins, Zubac, Ja Morant. Yeah. I think end of the season, someone on Indiana tried to dunk, and he blocked him too, but.
Yeah, those blocks were amazing. I think we're just getting to the point now where these guys, it's like, we got to think about it. It's like, yo, the Raptors have too many 10th and 11th men.
Well, C's going to look pretty good because the rest of us, most of these guys are getting C's or under. Yuta Watanabe. You know what? As much as I love Yuta, I'm giving him a C+.
Yeah, I don't see anyone else on this rest of this list that we're going to do getting higher than a C.
That's fair.
So I'm going to... Yeah, I'm going to give him – yeah, sure. I'll give him a C+. You know, I think – what was it? Nick said that he wants his shot to get better, right? You know, I think Utah just – he just strikes me as a guy who could be better on the offensive end. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just his size and speed. Like, it just feels like there should be a better offensive game there.
Yeah, which, you know, he did slightly showcase – and I mean that seriously, very, very slightly because – the last 21 games of the year, he played, you know, more than 10 minutes in every single one of those games. You can't look at his overall season numbers because, like, he obviously, like, had tons of games where he played, like, 2 minutes. So it's going to break down his average. But the last 21 games, he played 19 minutes per game. He had, you know, scored 7 points on 50% shooting, 42% from three. That's good. Like, that is actually pretty good.
But if you're playing that many minutes in those meaningless games, like, I'm expecting you to put up, like, Jalen Harris numbers, man.
Yeah, and he really only had that one game where he scored 21. I mean, really, it's about his two-way production. I think defensively, his hustle and effort was always really good, and that earned him a spot on the roster. But I think.
But again, on a really good team, on a really good team right now, Utah's going to be your 9th or 10th guy, 11th guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's true. I'm going to put C++ for him.
And actually, I forgot we still got Malachi and Jalen, so we got some more A pluses to hand out.
Well, all right. Well, Malachi Flynn, that's the next guy on my list, man. Are we gonna get Malachi? Oh, by the way, at this point, we're at the key. I forgot to say the keeper, the cut thing. To be honest, the first few: Kyle, Fred, Pascal, OG, Kem, Gary, Chris. I think those guys are all keeps, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that should be the rotation, really. Freddie Gillespie, is that a keep for you?
What's the middle one? Like, it doesn't matter. I don't care if they keep or cut.
Keep until training camp next, like a training camp invite, but no guarantee for the next season. That's kind of like
yeah. In-between. Okay, Freddie training camp invite.
Okay, so he's the okay. Yeah, he's the middle. Okay, so
he's Utah? The middle. Yeah. Utah, I think the middle too. To be honest.
Okay, that's fair. No, these are all fair. Okay, Malachi Flynn. We're getting to
Malachi Flynn. I'm gonna give a B. I'm gonna give him a B. You know, I just feel like he really came on strong towards the end of the season. You know what? I'll make it a B plus. You know, I thought he was really impressive towards the end of the season. Maybe I'm just penalizing him because it's not his fault. He was like bouncing back and forth and didn't really get into the rotation. Remember when they flew him from the G League bubble to Milwaukee to play 1 minute?
That was an all-time moment of the season, actually.
and he wasn't offered any food. He
didn't. There's no food on the private jet, bro.
That's when Masai was like, "Yo, I'm gonna need to make these demands to MLSE next season.
I can't have my players starve on the plane.
We can't have a private jet, but not any Dasani water.
I'm telling you, Malachi Flynn had basically my journey from China to Canada. Like it was like all I had was like 16 Seven Ups.
Yeah,
on the flight,
his pants were ripped. Yeah, his pants.
Yo, relax, chill.
No, but like, no, man. The more I talk about Flynn, the more I want to just keep bumping the grade up because I don't know, because he actually was pretty impressive towards the end of the season. Like, you could see him as a rotation player, no? Like,
yeah.
For a 20, what was it? 20, what was it? 29th? 29th pick?
29th pick. You know, I think for a 29th pick, he did really well. Even for just a rookie standard, he did really, really well.
I like the confidence and the composure he has, man.
And that's fair. And again, I think the best case for him is like the last 24 games of the season from April onward, he averaged 12.5 points, 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, kept his turnovers low, 3-to-1 turnover ratio, assist to turnover ratio. Shot 40% from the field, which is a little bit low, but he did shoot 37% from three. So that's all good. And he did have some pretty big moments in the fourth quarter as well. But I think there is a consistency point with him that I think you do expect to see a little bit more out of. Like if he's going to be a backup point guard, I really do need to see that to be even more consistent. I'm not expecting a backup point guard to be like, you know, Chris Paul every single night. But like I think I do expect some level of like, playmaking where there were some games and for some stretches where he would come in and just not be able to play make for quite some time. And then you'll have spurts where he can like really pop off and score and set people up and defend and everything like that. But you know that, and then also just like the first, like, I don't know, bit of the season. I mean, it's hard to judge a rookie based on this year, but I mean the first 23 games of the year, he averaged 2 points per game, man.
No, he was terrible at the start of the year. I remember he looked great and he looked great in preseason. Didn't he cook LaMelo Ball in one of the games?
Yeah. And some people said that he was better than LaMelo.
Yeah, and then he had all this hype coming into the season. And when Nick finally dusted him off the bench, like he didn't make an impact at all. But I feel like I judge the rookies a lot easier, maybe.
Okay.
Just because, you know, you talk about the consistency and all that. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But I also like, I don't know, I just don't expect that from him right now. And maybe, you know, if Kyle is here, if Kyle is not here next season, then, you know, maybe that's something that we want out of him when he takes on a bigger role. But I don't know. That's another guy I feel like should go to the 905, you know, if the world gets normal again. Like, he should just run 905 for, like, half a season.
Luckily, they have Summer League, so that's nice. They just announced they're going to do Summer League in August. So, Malachi and Jalen Harris and Freddie Gillespie, man. That's got to be a championship team in a Summer League setting, plus whoever they get in the lottery pick. That's not bad, honestly. I'm actually really looking forward to Summer League. I'm down horrendously right now. Wow. Okay, fine. You've
this guy's really hyping up the Vegas championship odds. That's a pretty stacked team, though, to be honest.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This could be like the year they have Fred and Pascal and Jakob. No, it's not like that at all. I'm gonna fine. You've talked me into a B for Malachi. This is on a curve level B. But what do you give me, Malachi, again? What'd you settle in? B plus?
I'll give him a B plus. Yeah, B plus.
Wow, damn.
Yo, I just think for 29th pick, like even if he turns into a rotation player, like that's pretty good, man.
All right, but I mean, you could say like Utah for an undrafted guy, like you know, like ultimately.
No, people have said that. I don't need to push that narrative.
All right, fair enough. All right, Jalen Harris, our guy.
Yeah, so A plus honor roll, absolutely, you know, top of the class valedictorian. What else do the good kids get? Yeah.
The valedictorian speech from Jalen Harris is gonna be great, man.
It's just We the North. Yeah, he just says We the North.
And yes, sir.
Yeah, no, We the North has gone mainstream. You know, this man honestly just deserves, an A grade. I don't know what I'm actually going to give him. Like, I don't know.
It's hard. It's an incomplete. He didn't play. He just didn't play. Yeah. Like, it's hard to. He played like 9 games in the G League.
But he cooked Luka Doncic, though. I feel like that's worthy of a B.
You know what? To be honest, based on the way we've been grading these guys, it might be worth a B. I don't know.
No, let's go incomplete. No, I'm with you on that. But again, for a 59th pick, I don't know. Not bad. You know, out of these guys, bench guys, like Malachi and Jalen are the ones that I'm probably most excited to see how they develop. Like, it does seem like there's potential there, but I don't know. Like, what happened to Duan Hernandez? He was around and then he was gone. Like,
yeah, he was in the Raptors G League team this past year in the bubble, and he came off the bench.
But Jalen, I don't know, man. Jalen has a nice offensive game, man.
He does.
He probably needs to get his weight up, you know, real skinny.
Yeah.
But like, man, like, I don't know, man. He's nice.
I'm going to read you his per 36 numbers. You ready for this?
Goodness, yeah. Down horrendously.
20 points. 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 50% from the field, 47% from three, and 78% from the free throw line. I'm just gonna leave it at that.
No, he's got a nice offensive game, man. For someone like, you know, at his point of his career. But again, another guy that, like, you know, let's get him on like 905 for like, you know, half a season, see where he goes.
Yeah, my only concern with Jalen was that, is he a guy who's going to be injury prone? Because he did get hurt for like 3 separate times in the year. And to your point about the physicality, I think like there is a certain level of physicality it takes to play in the NBA. I don't want to hang that label on him. That's like very unfair at this point. It's just something I put as an open question. But for me, he's, you know, I mean, Malachi, we're obviously keeping. Jalen, for me, is still like a middle, like just like Yuta and Freddie. Like, these guys are coming into training camp. But
yeah,
not I just necessarily feel like, a full guarantee for a roster spot just yet.
Yeah, no, I would go keep, and obviously super biased, just because he's extended the We the North brand for another decade now.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. But I think, you know, if you compare him to like Freddie or Utah, you know, I feel like there's a higher ceiling. But we're talking about like end of bench guys right now.
Speaking of end of bench guys right now, Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, I don't know. C-?
Yeah. I think C- is the fair grade. I think if you look at his impact metrics, they're really poor. And, you know, I think that as much as like on-off numbers aren't all about one guy, when you look at the end of the season and who was like the very bottom at plus minus, it's like him and Aaron Baines. So I think on that front, but I do think it's one of those things where the eye test, to me, it did seem like he was making a really big impact offensively. And I valued that a lot. And Nick Nurse did play him in some big moments this season. Early in the year, he was in the rotation kind of as that like 10th guy. So I don't really see why, like, for example, like Stanley should have that much lower of a grade than Yuta. I think Yuta can shoot the three, but I think honestly, Stanley might've made more threes this season than Yuta, which is, you know, listen, if you've made less threes than Stanley, then like, how much can we really buy into the shooting? But, yeah, Stanley made 45 threes this year, and Yuta made 36.
I think that's fair, and that's why I never trust grades. You know, don't let grades define who you are. No, but I think I'm probably grading Stanley for the fact that for probably just like his career compared to like his lottery position, and like the fact that, I mean, from the time he's come here to Toronto, like 2 years later now, you know, nothing's changed in terms of how I feel about him as a player, right?
That's fair.
Like,
yeah.
It's not something where I'm like, oh, we saw a lot of different things where it feels like he could be part of the future, because he's super young. I mean, timeline wise, from an age perspective, he fits the timeline, but skill wise, no, right?
He did say in his own exit interview that he's still only 24, which is
It's really wild. This man guarded, he was the LeBron stopper when LeBron was on the Cavs, right?
Yeah.
Like 2016. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he had some nice moments for sure, and he had some really nice pressers. But I think anything above C- is too generous. DeAndre Bembry,
I give a C. You know, I think Bembry for me is the same. Like, you know, I watched him play a little bit in Atlanta. You know, I like the energy that he brings. and he's got all these like quirky moves, I feel like, on offense that sometimes works. But again, he's another guy where it's like, I don't know if anything's changed from what I've seen since he joined the Raptors. Like, he kind of is just who he is. Like, can he play big minutes on a really good team? I don't think so.
Yeah, and that's where I doubt it too. I think, I mean, to your point, he has almost the exact same numbers as last year in Atlanta. I think one thing he did do better was he did a better job of finishing at the basket. I was legitimately impressed with his ability to finish there and did play well with other guys. And he came in guarded, you know, honestly had some games where he really stepped up as like a point guard kind of situation. But yeah, realistically, on the whole, in terms of the impact, I'm going to give him a C+. Because I do feel like he's like on par with Utah in terms of like that level of impact. But I think one thing for DeAndre is just like the turnovers were really, really strange at the end of the year. He did a really good job of being like playing within himself. And then end of the season came, obviously, like more pressure on him to create. And then he just would have these big turnover games, which when I mean big turnover games, it just felt like a lot of these were like unnecessary turnovers. Like he had like a 4 turnover game, a 5 turnover game, another 4, some 3s. Like it's like, you know, if you are going to be a useful secondary ball handler, like you're going to need to take care of the ball a little bit better too. And I am also judging a lot of these guys, not based on how they played the whole year, but also based on specific moments where they were needed the most. Like when the Raptors had all those guys down to COVID and I think, you know, he got put into the protocol as well. I don't know if he actually had it or not, but like in those moments, he didn't really step up, right? Like there were games like against Chicago where the Raptors had like nobody, 0-for-5, 0 points. Right, like Boston, 2-of-6, you know, 4 points. Detroit, you know, 27.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying though. With guys like, DeAndre, Stanley, and Utah, like, you know, you only really need like one of those guys on a team like this.
That's the thing. We did have a lot of these guys. Which, speaking of which, we didn't actually say we're going to keep Stanley or not. To be honest, I'm probably saying cut.
Yeah. No. Same for me.
Yeah. And then Bembry.
Bembry, because they can guarantee his contract, right? I would say
it's like 2 mil next year.
I would say the middle, like training camp invite
thing. Okay, all right, fair enough. I think that's fair. That's where I'm going to stay as well.
Honestly, if his contract is for like what, less than 2 mil, like I don't know. Actually, I'll just say keep. Like,
this is one of those things where they can't just bring him into training camp and then kind of decide, like,
right. Like they have to guarantee it, right?
Yeah. I'm probably leading keep. You know what?
I'm gonna good go vibes. With keep. Good vibes outfits. Too. Good vibes, yeah. Good
outfits.
I love how we just resort to good vibes now. It's so tough. Bro,
this is tough. All right. Paul Watson.
I don't know, man. You start with this one.
Well, first off, you know, the other day I was doing the last React Pod and I was like, who, you know, the Raptors had all these guys who score 30 and I listed everybody easily.
Oh, you forgot one guy. It was Paul Watson?
Yeah. And that's kind of like, it's a little easy to forget about Paul, I think, because he's so quiet, he barely plays. So he ended up playing 300 minutes. It was fine-ish. I would say he basically had, like, the Malcolm Miller role. And, you know, he was more productive than Malcolm was in that role. But, like, you know, I don't think this affected the bottom line here or there. It wasn't like he, like, popped offensively. Obviously, he had that one game. But, you know, it still didn't feel like, can he take it to the basket? Is he going to be a great defender? I don't really know what his path at the moment is specifically to getting into a rotation consistently. I do like a lot of the tools there. Maybe I can see him becoming a reliable 3-point shooter. I can see him becoming a guy who guards well because he's big and he's pretty quick for his size. But I don't know. He's just a guy who, when he plays, a lot of times you don't notice him out there except for that one time he had 30 and then he didn't play the rest of the season basically. So
yeah,
I'm probably giving him a D, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you could even give him an incomplete, like 300 minutes. That's like nothing, right?
It's not a lot for sure. It's really a shame that he did, you know, get hurt at the end of the season because I think he would have been one of those guys that would have played a ton of minutes that could have gotten a better chance.
No, he's another guy that's like, to me, he's like an end of bench / 905 guy. So yeah. I don't really have too much to say about him.
Okay, so you're giving him an incomplete. That's fair. Are you keeping him?
Yeah. I'm cool with either. Training camp invite.
All right,
everyone back.
Just
seems so harsh, you know.
I know. Yeah. It's really really sad, but it is.
Wow, if we ran the team, we would really just run this team back.
Oh God, this is why we call it running back. This is terrible. Rodney Hood.
Rodney Hood's got to be an incomplete, man. This guy barely played.
I'm sorry. It's an F for me, dog.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
It's not even just incomplete. No, that feels unfair. It's an F.
Wow. I mean, for me, it's like, I mean, we can talk about it if you want, but like, I don't see the point just because like he's not coming back. Like, he's not going to be part of the team.
No, he's not coming back. No.
Yeah. So shouts to Rodney.
He seemed like a really great guy. And I think his most memorable moment was when, when Blake Murphy asked him in the media call if he knew Paramore, Hayley Williams from Paramore.
Oh yeah, they were neighbors or whatever, right?
Yeah, but he didn't even give a good answer to this that. So
it's an F. This is down bad, man. All right, who's next?
Oh, he's cut though. He's cut. And it's nothing against him. It just didn't. Yeah, it didn't really. I think he was only in the deal to make the money work. Aaron Baines
for sure. Aaron Baines. Guess it would be an F, right?
What do you mean? Guess. Think,
yeah.
No, it's an F.
I don't know. I just. Yeah, it's an F. It's F minus. Is there F minuses?
There's no point, man. F is, you know, below 50. At that point, there's no point.
G minus? Damn, yo. Yes, no.
This guy called a musical theory on the guy. he's a G flat, yo. Come on, man.
No, I think, you know, everything's been said about Baines. And, you know, I don't think
we don't need to harp on it. Yeah.
No, we don't need to harp on it. We don't need to pile on. And, you know, I think Masai said it best. You know, he didn't mention him by name, but he said it was a misfit. And, you know, the way that they looked at the center position, they probably looked at it wrong in terms of who they were going to bring in. And the thing, I think the reason why it's an F is because it just didn't work right from the very start. Like, it wasn't like things fell off after a while. He showed glimpses. I think that's just where Baines was at this point in his career, is that he is really at the tail end of his career.
Yeah,
and he just was not a starting caliber center or maybe even a rotation player anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was apparent from the very beginning, and a lot of things sunk this team. But, you know, if Kem Birch was with the Raptors at the start of the season, and if the Raptors didn't have COVID and go 1-13 in March, they're probably the sixth seed. We probably look at the team the same way evaluation wise. You know, I don't think it changes the evaluation of the team, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Do you know how many games of the season until Baines got benched?
Like bench, like completely DMP?
Yep.
I don't know, man. 50?
He got benched in his eighth game. He started the first seven. The last two games there.
Right. He disappeared for a little bit. Okay.
He got benched three straight games for Alex Len.
Yeah, and then Alex Len got Len. Cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then he came back, and then Nick finally went small against the Bucks, and then I don't know. That's gonna be all time worst signings, man.
It's really up there. It's unfortunate, and again, I don't want to pile on a guy. It's just like I was doing the rack pod, and I was giving him some like stars at the end of the season because he did have some nice moments there. And I realized when I looked at the you know game log for the first time that he got his second double double in the 72nd game of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it was just starting frustrating. Like,
you know,
the rebounding was just not there. And for me, it's just a trickle down effect on the rest of the guys, like Pascal. You know, even like Kyle and Fred, like playing with him, the Raptors are fighting themselves. They're fighting their own starting lineup. Like, you can't win games like that. I don't care if you're in Toronto or Tampa.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Okay, we're going to rapid fire through just the last three names because they're gone. And there are other players who have gone, but I don't really care to evaluate any of them. Matt Thomas, I need your comment on Matt Thomas. Matt Thomas this season. What was your favorite Matt Thomas memory of the 2021 Raptors?
Oh, man. Was there one? Can you remind me?
Corey Joseph crossing him up on back-to-back possessions.
Goodness. Yeah, I think that's when Nick officially excised him from the rotation, to be honest.
The start of the season, you remember preseason, Nick was like talking about Matt Thomas.
He said Matt was locked into a spot.
Yeah,
Nick always says that.
Nick, bro, don't promise things, man. Don't be like us on this thing.
No, you know, honestly, I think there was some excitement about Matt Thomas coming into the season, like being a rotation guy, and that just vanished really quickly. You know, obviously they moved him at the deadline, and I don't know if there's anything that more needs to be said. I think just at this level, it's hard for him to get a lot of minutes on the defensive end because of how he plays on the defensive end. It's kind of a shame because, you know, I know we talk about the shooting percentage and, you know, the 99% and all of that, but like, I don't know, man, he is, you know, the Raptors got into these offensive ruts all year. You know, that's the type of shooter you want coming off the bench, but it's just hard to play him when he's giving away the points back on the other end, right?
Yeah, and realistically, he didn't come in and have that sort of game-changing
impact. No, he didn't. Yeah,
and he did. So that's, yeah. You know, that's the thing. And when he went to Utah, like, you know, he's playing 19 games there, averaged 7 minutes per game.
Yeah.
He shot 25% from three. Obviously, we know that's not accurate, but, like, he hasn't really impacted the game there either. And this is a Utah team that had Donovan Mitchell and, you know, and Mike Conley out, so there were more minutes at guard available, but they just didn't turn it to him. So I don't know why they used the second round pick to get Matt Thomas, but maybe they see him as a project for next year. In any case, though, we liked Matt a lot. The propaganda was fun, but there was nothing to propagandize about this season, man.
Yeah, no, I was telling you too, we need you know, I know you got the Gerald Henderson award. We need some kind of annual award. I guess maybe we can name it after Matt Thomas because he was the first in terms of just the annual kind of propaganda player. You know, last year it was Matt Thomas. This year it was Jalen Harris. You know, I don't know who it will be next year. I can't wait to find out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be tough, man. To be honest, I kind of wanted to take that position for Utah because at the start of the season, he said he wanted to bring a rice cooker to Florida, which
The thing with Utah, like, Utah already has such a huge fan base.
That's true.
Like, it's all about finding guys and building the fan base up for them.
Yeah, you're basically just collecting jerseys for Coachella 2030, which is coming up soon. Actually, I don't know, man. You're gonna have to,
Yeah, I know. It's coming up just like my 40th birthday. That's not this year. Yeah, I don't know, man. If my Raptors 905 contact is listening, I'm still waiting for that game worn Jalen Harris jersey. Hit me up. Let's do this.
Oh, word, word.
Yeah, yeah, they were sending jerseys back from the bubble, and we had some conversations about me acquiring one. But
wow, damn.
We'll figure it out.
Would I love to see that. All right. Alex Len.
Goodness. Are we even grading these guys? I'm giving all these guys incomplete.
Oh, no, these are not grades. These are not grades. I just wanted your final
comment. We're just talking about them. Yeah. Alex Len, I think he was like a minus 12 the other day in the play-in game in like 11 minutes. So shout out to Alex Len. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. The most memorable moment, obviously hitting those three-pointers against the New York Knicks. Mm-hmm. And also saying that there was some issues in the locker room and then just getting cut after.
Yep. That was unfortunate.
Yeah.
Do you want to guess how many total points he scored this season for the Raptors?
70? Is that too high?
16.
Oh, my God. Okay. 16, wow. Okay. Way too high.
16. Damn. Total points.
That's not possible. He must have had 15 of those against the Knicks.
That's correct. He did. Well, he didn't have 15, but he had. Well, we know he hit the three threes. Let me just.
I gotta know this,
man. That's 11. He had 11 of those. He scored 16 total points.
He had 5 points otherwise.
Yeah, 5 points otherwise. Yeah, man. It was a tough year for a lot of guys, and Alex didn't fit. But he did say, though, his goal was to make the playoffs. He's one of these, like, rare guys who has never made the playoffs before. And preseason,
he's been on a lot of bad teams, man.
He was like, yo, I'm so excited to come to the Raptors. You know, we can finally go to the playoffs. And turns out he went to the playoffs without the Raptors. So congratulations to Alex Len. All right, last
congrats,
one.
Congrats, Manders. Yeah.
Henry Ellenson.
Come on, man. My nephew's favorite player. You know, if you guys don't know, I took my nephews before the pandemic. I took my nephews to a Raptors 905 game. You know, they're pretty young, so they obviously don't understand the difference between the Raptors and Raptors 905. So they thought they were at a Raptors game. And then my younger nephew looks to me when Henry Ellenson was being introduced in the starting lineup. What's the place in Mississauga that they play out of?
Paramount
Fine Foods. Yeah. And my nephew was like, "Where's Spicy P?" I'm like, "Yo, just don't worry about it." And then Henry Ellenson became their favorite player. I don't know, man. I remember Henry. They were hyping him up on the broadcast in the OKC game. I remember, like, this guy's got a nice little pick and pop jumper. I was like, what am I doing with my life?
That's I mean, look, I'm happy for Henry because he got the chance to play and he got the call up because he did play really well for the 905. He was the 905's best player. like legitimately he was like Jokic at that level. But when he came up to the Raptors, it just didn't really pan out. Clearly, obviously, on a 10-day deal, you're not really going to do that much and make that much of an impression.
Yeah.
But I have to ask you this question. Who scored more points for the Raptors this year, Alex Len or Henry Ellenson?
Len.
Len by 1 point. Henry scored 15 in his two games. Alex was at 16. Henry did he did out-rebound Alex, though, 12-11. And had more assists, five to three.
You definitely, I know you definitely have a solid listenership base if you're pulling content like this, man. Come on.
I know this is arrogance on my part.
Come on, man.
It was a tough year, man. It was a tough year. But listen.
This guy's doing Ellenson versus Len trivia. Who asked for this, man?
Oh, if anyone's listening at this point of the season, or at this point in the podcast, you know, just we love
ready,
you guys.
Man. Get ready. Another hour to go.
Yeah. Well, Alex, this is the point of the pod where I got to ask you about things outside of basketball. Okay, first off, how's your book going, man? When's your book coming? Like, for real? Like, want to read that.
No, no, we can't talk about my book. So I'm in a weird spot where, like, I finished my manuscript last month. I'm working on kind of finalizing it. You know, I've got editors, at the publisher looking through it, fact checkers, things like that. Okay. So we're going to go through different rounds of edits. Early feedback. I did get an email from my editor the other day. He said, the book is great so far. You should be really proud of what you put together. Just what I'm going to live by. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wait, hold on. What? Is that not a good thing?
No, it's great. It's great. But it's just one person's opinion. No, listen, it's weird, man. I spent a year working on this and it's like now I get to share with the world, you know, it's going to be released in October. Mm-hmm. So don't worry, man. The media push is coming. You know me.
Okay. All right.
The media push is going to come, you know, over the summer and towards October. Excited to share more details then. We don't need to talk about it now. Still too early.
Can't wait for you to go on the low post and advocate for us.
Zach, you got to answer my email. Zach doesn't check his Gmail anymore.
That's fair, to be honest. I emailed him 2 years ago and it has not happened, but you know, listen, people have things to do, and honestly I have a lot of unanswered dealing myself. So
Zach Lowe, OG Stephen LeBron radio
guest. I was gonna say, bro, he's been on your podcast, come on, man.
me and Zach are cool. Shouts to Zach. I'll name drop for clout.
My one Zach Lowe story, he did shout me out once, but like my one Zach Lowe story was, I was in Oracle Arena and in the back area where they had set up a bunch of tables for, like, obviously hundreds of press and stuff like that. And we're eating like the free media meals. You know, obviously, Alex, you know, I ate a second one for you, obviously, in your honor. Okay. Just can't turn down chili. All right.
Yo, once again, man, yo, if you're listening to this content still, honestly, just add me and Will on Twitter, man. I want to know who these people are.
Yo, let us know what you thought. Actually, give us a grade, please.
Grade us. I mean, if it's a bad grade, I'll mute you. Like, it's whatever. Yeah. No shouts. No, but your Zach Lowe story, what's up?
Yeah, so we're like, I was like eating the media meal and I was sitting down at my laptop, probably trying to work on some things, you know, whatever. And then Zach Lowe just sits down beside me. I was like, oh shit, that's Zach Lowe. And then I don't know, man, like I don't really get starstruck like over the course of this, like playoff, like the championship run, you run into people. Like I sat beside Stephen A. Smith. That was real cool. He was just like sitting pregame eating it, getting someone to get him a hamburger. And he was just like on his iPad watching Mission Impossible. And I'm like, this guy is hilarious. That's a G, man. No, that's a G move. Yeah. It really is. I was like very close to Drake, you know, things like this, like not in like personally, just like proximity wise, you know, like, and none of that really like starstruck me, but for some reason, Zach Lowe sitting beside me eating like a bowl of chili while on a phone call was just like, holy crap. And like, it literally went on for 30 minutes. And the whole time I was like, I should talk to him. I should say something. I should just be like, yo, Zach, you know,
yo, come on,
I'm Will.
How are you fanning this hard, man?
And for 30 minutes. And then this man just like finished his food finally and left. And I was like, fuck, I can't believe I did. No, just say
Zach,
hi.
No, Zach knows your work. You know, he's called you the great Will Lou before. I think one of the things I got to tell Zach, you know, I had a chance to meet Zach when I lived in New York and just obviously connect with him when we did our podcast. And we've, you know, whenever I bump into the arena, it's good to catch up with him. But like, I got to tell him next time, like when he does those, you know, those annual Christmas Raptors catch up pods, cause he's got family here in Toronto. So he comes back Yo, me and you got to get on one of those, man. Wow. Come on.
We're
man.
Just openly like, advocating against Eric and
Shouts to Kareem. Yo, listen, man. It's Asian Heritage Month. You know, you got to know your worth. Wow. You got to know your talent. You got to know your value. So why would you, you know, I would put your resume and stack your basketball knowledge out there with anyone else's.
Wow.
I'm officially your agent. You know this. You know, I'm Rich Paul. Yep. You know, you call me Rich Brian, but it's fine. I really hate it when you call me Rich
Brian. Nah, you're Rich Brian, bro.
No, but like,
at least I didn't give you the pre-name change, man.
Yeah, you know, actually, I got a crazy Zach story. You know, because I went to Croatia. This was probably like, I don't know, like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And Zach actually sent me like all the places to check out because that's where his wife is from.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember he like jokingly gave me the address to like his in-laws' place, and I was actually staying in that area. So I like took a photo of his in-laws' place and sent it to him and freaked him out.
Nah,
maybe that's
this,
why
this is why he's not answering your emails, bro.
Yeah, it's all making sense now. No, but Zach's like an honorary Toronto man. He's really an honorary Toronto man.
Yes, yeah. And that's why it's funny when people from Toronto get mad at Zach. I'm like, yo, Zach shows us a lot of love in proportion to
We gotta stop getting so mad at American media, man. Like, I don't know. That's another conversation. Let's save that podcast for another day.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, we're going to need a lot of running back content in the offseason. I can't believe we burned our whole Zach Lowe episode, apparently.
Yeah. What else, man? What else? Jeremy Lin apparently announced his retirement. Yeah. So watch running back next week when we repeat this conversation, but let's have it now.
Okay. Look, I totally understand why he didn't get called up. Like, it's, you know, he's 32. Like, you know, most guys in the G League are. Younger, obviously. He might have been the oldest guy. Well, that's not true. Actually, they had the select team, so there was like Amir Johnson and Jared Jack were in there. But I understand why he didn't get called up, but I also understand what his frustration is, because he decided to leave the CBA. He wanted to come to get another chance in the NBA. No one signed him in the offseason, which is fine. Didn't get a training camp deal, which is, you know, okay, it's fine. But like, you know, I think he said that a lot of executives told him, yo, we really like your game, but we want to know two things. We want to know if you're still healthy, and we want to know if you can shoot, right? And so he's like, all right, so if you, their advice was go to the G League and show that. And he did show that. Like, his jumper was, like, way better than at any other point. And to his point, like, he finished, like, seventh in the G League in shooting, in scoring. And, like, the top 12 guys in the G League who in scoring all got called up. Like, every single one of them got called up except for Jeremy. Now, of course, those guys are younger. Some of those guys already had contracts, you know, whatever, but like, or they're on two ways or whatever. But I just feel bad for Jeremy in that sense, because I feel like he just wasted his time. You know what I mean? Like, he showed he could shoot. He showed he was healthy. Showed he could still produce. And he just didn't even get like a 10-day. I think even if he got a 10-day, he would have been pretty, pretty happy with it. I don't think he was asking for anything more than that. Just like a chance to come back into the building and sort of like, you know, even beyond the money for him, it was sort of like maybe a personal sort of journey to sort of get back if he could. And that just didn't happen for him. So I'm a little heartbroken for him just on that front. I know, like, as Raptor fans, like, we know Jeremy is, like, you know, disappointing based on the buyout situation that happened. But, like, as I say multiple times, like, Jeremy, before he came to Toronto that year, he was a premium buyout guy for the Raptors. Like, it was absolutely a premium guy, averaging 11 points per game, shot 47% from the field, 33% from three. That's not great. But still, like, pretty productive guy in Atlanta.
He cooked the Raptors too, man.
He put 30 on the Raptors, right? Yeah. And then, it just didn't work out. But I just feel bad for the guy. What do you think? Obviously, you're Jeremy's, like, you know, you've written about Jeremy as much as anybody has outside of like Pablo Torre. So,
no, I think you're right. I think part of it was just kind of a closure thing for him too, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he wants to end his NBA career. And you know, it's weird because obviously his last memory of the NBA is winning a championship. Mm-hmm. But obviously he's talked about how tough that was for him personally, you know, reconciling with the fact that he won a championship, but he didn't contribute the way that he wanted. So, yeah, it's tough, man. I remember early in the year, they were trying to get, I think it was the Warriors who were going to sign him. But then the paperwork thing didn't work out. Like, there was some deadline that they couldn't reach. So it seemed like he was close there. I think the tough thing for Jeremy too, when he looks at it and compares to like you said, the other players who you know let the G League in scoring, is like, he's not. I think he's always been on the outside of like the NBA fraternity as a whole. you know, you look at these guys, you know, kind of like, you know, LeBron's got the banana boat. Like, these guys have their own cliques. Like, I know Jeremy's, you know, close with Steph, you know, they work out a lot and things like that. But he's not one of those players where other players are advocating of saying like, hey, like, Jeremy needs to get back in the league. Like, we need to get Jeremy a spot. Like, we've seen so many roster spots go to guys. Like, remember when the Knicks or whoever gave J.R. Smith's brother a spot? Like, Chris Smith.
Chris Smith, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, there's been guys less, you know, qualified and deserving of getting spots that I find it hard that one of these franchises, you know, wouldn't, you know, give Jeremy a chance, you know, besides the fact that he could maybe still be, you know, a bench player or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, obviously, I think it's a more personal thing, you know, for us following him. And I do think, I just hope he finds kind of that closure, because I think it's tough for someone to have such a huge impact on the community and, you know, just across the world to have that impact and grow into this like outspoken voice to not be able to get that closure that he wants. I think he's an emotional guy, man. It weighs on him a lot.
Yeah, and I'm only saying this on a personal level because I think you could probably make this case for a lot of other players, and I think that's probably where a lot of people tune out of this conversation is like, oh, boo, sure. Like, he had a long NBA career, he made money, he left, he's very famous, you know, what's the big deal here? I think the big deal is just I feel for Jeremy personally, just like I would feel for anybody else personally in that front as well. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's, you know, I just, you know, I think he's done a lot, as you mentioned, for the community. So I really
this man's literally got called coronavirus in the bubble. And like, honestly, I don't know about you, but if I was him, I would not be the bigger man and like not name the person and make a bigger deal out of it like he did.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, again, what's the point? I think honestly, that's the thing with canceling people. It's like, I think canceling people is fine. But like, you know, I think no longer associating with people, I think, is maybe productive in some senses. But I think the ultimate goal is to change behaviors. And
You're right. And it's not even about canceling people. It's just that, man, like, for him to like to do that, like, I just can't imagine, because you have to be just so angry.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyways, shout out
to Jeremy. Man. Shout out to Jeremy, man. That's tough. You gonna write another Jeremy story for New York Times or what?
Yeah, sure. let me pitch that again.
Just take my quotes from this conversation, please put it into this story. Anyway,
big scam is when I just start writing stories I already wrote 4 years ago when it starts repeating. Happening. Don't tell people. No, but what else, man? What else? This is my portion to take over, you know. This is the Patreon preview. No, watch did you watch Nomadland?
No, I really want to though.
Okay, watch it. We got to talk about that one. Okay. Did you watch Tenet?
I did watch Tenet, yeah.
Yo, what the hell was the point of Tenet? Like, D- for me. F, yeah.
What, you didn't enjoy it? I mean, it was fun to, like, look at the action sequences.
Just, like, what was the point of that whole world? What was the point of the whole concept of, like, you know, moving backwards and forwards? Like, I just, you know, I feel like with his other movies, when he did, like, Interstellar and Inception, there was just, like, more depth to the characters. And there was just more of a deeper story behind it. Whereas this one, you just get thrown into this world and these things happen. And I'm like, I don't really care.
I see your point and I agree with you. It was very hard to follow. And like halfway through the movie, I'm like, I don't know what's going on here, really.
It wasn't even hard to follow. It wasn't. Like, I knew going in, like, people were like, oh, this is going to be so confusing. It wasn't hard to follow. It was just more like, once I understood what was going on, I was like, what's the point?
The storyline is kind of basic.
Mm-hmm.
Bad guy wants to blow up the world, you stop the bad guy. What I mean, like,
but that's what I'm saying. And then you introduce really all these like scientific concepts that, and I read that like he spent like a decade coming up with this, and I'm like, come on,
bro, man, come on, man. This guy read a grade 11 physics textbook on entropy and applied all those themes. He's like,
that man's got one of my favorite movies though, Memento. That's one of my favorite movies.
No, shout out, man. No, but I mean, to be honest though, I gotta ask you guys this question: were you too high to watch this movie?
No, I was in a perfect state, is all I'll say.
Took you out of it?
No. I was in a state that had me focused. Like, I was focused, I was locked in. Right. I understood what was going on. Like, I was following it.
You really approached the movie like, yo, I really want to absorb this. I'm gonna specifically
I was locked in. This is like a play-in tournament game to me, man. Wow. I was locked in. I just didn't get it. Like, I legit, I think I Googled after. I was like, what was the point of Tenet? Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't go that far. I just Googled how tall that actress was because she was like a legit 6'5". I was very distracting. I was like, yo, what? Because she dunked? She could definitely dunk, man.
Oh, man. Anyways. Yeah, I think that's actually all the bonus topics I have. I really wanted to stretch this for another hour.
Said to clear off 3 hours, man, which, you know, I understand, but like, this is tough.
Listen, man, we got to give the people a classic.
Don't feel the pressure, man. Why are you feeling this pressure at this specific time?
This Zoom recording is going to take like 40 minutes to finish loading.
I was going to say, man, I got another interview after this. Yeah, what are you going to do in the offseason, man? Do you have any...
I don't know. Just working on my usual kind of freelance stuff. Obviously, we're still doing run it back.
Yep.
Throughout the playoffs. We were supposed to start doing playoff stuff this week, but then Masai's exit interview was so great. Like, that was just the whole episode. Yeah, you know, might be putting together another book, a Raptors-related book, so stay tuned on that.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
No, I heard the idea. I'm excited. I'm not going to know anything about it, but
yeah,
that's why I'm excited to learn, man.
No, it'll be fun. And yeah, I don't know. That's it, man. Happy Asian Heritage Month.
Happy Asian Heritage Month. And honestly, happy end of the season. I think like we probably do just need to like mentally be done with this year. Like it was taking a lot out of me. Like I wrote like a 10 things to remember, or I think 10 things to forget about this year. And there were a lot of things in there, but like, man, it's just like, well, going back over it, I was like, yo, this season was such a shit show. Like, it was so terrible. Remember, I forgot this while I was in the process of writing, and I remembered it. It was one of the last things cut. Do you remember the game where Nick Nurse accidentally got ejected? He didn't know he already had one technical, was yelling at the ref. The ref's like, all right, you're out of here, buddy. He's like, what? That's my first technical. And he's like, oh, that's your second technical.
I don't remember that.
That was the Memphis game.
Who did they play?
It was Memphis. Because in the first half, someone was complaining, and like he thought Pascal got the tech, but apparently the tech was given to Nick, and then he just argued, and he got a second tech, and he got kicked out of the game, and the Raptors came back in that game, and they won. But like, you know, that this is kind of what the season was like. Everybody was like, "Oh, we didn't even give Nick Nurse a grade, to be honest." But I'm giving you an A+ because apparently I'm Nick Nurse's teacher's pet. But like, you know, if you're gonna give him more honest,
yeah, I'll give him a B. He needs to drop. If anyone from the Nick Nurse Foundation is still listening, we need a purple colorway of the NN hat because I know he was dropping some new colorways towards the end of the season.
Wow.
I'm not trying to wear a beige colorway, man. Come on, cream colorway. Like, we need a Raptors purple NN hat.
The Nick Nurse shop.
That's what we need. But this season was weird, you know. I miss being in the locker room and just like, you know, talking to players, you know, doing stories that way. Obviously, being at the arena, you know, being around just other reporters, you know, obviously I didn't do the day-to-day stuff like a lot of you guys did in terms of the Zooms, but I don't know. I can't imagine, like, I know we were talking earlier, like it's a very good, like more organized format for the reporters, but it's just, you lose a lot when you're just not seeing these players like in person.
For sure.
So, and, I don't know, man. Like, you've been a person on a fucking... Oh, whoops. You've been a person on a Zoom screen the whole season.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, also, wild. This job is less fun when you're not, like, sitting in media row with your friends. I mean,
yeah,
that's the part I miss, like, the most about it. Like
no, not it's like the interactions. You, yeah, Ash, no, the interactions me, matter. You know, the you know, honestly, just, like, building those relationships, too, like, you know, within the media... And with friends, and it's like there's just so many things you miss about just even going to the arena, like going to the arena, like anticipating a big game, and things like that. Like, yeah. I don't know, man.
You sound like you're about to tell me you miss a DVP at this rate. Like, what's going on?
No, like it really sucks. Like, you figure by this point it'd be a for sure certainty that the Raptors would start next year in Toronto, but you got Masai out here pleading.
Yeah.
Because of the way everything has been handled, and that sucks.
Damn. No, I mean, look, listen, everyone go get your vaccines. Seems like this, the supply seems quite high. You know, I went to get the vaccine. Like, it literally was super painless. My arm was like somewhat sore for like a day.
Wow. And then, I was done longer. For 4 days, man.
Yeah. Your immune system trash, bro. But, um, No, but go get your vaccine, okay? Let's try to get through this. And honestly, like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, the next season is not that far out, but I am somewhat optimistic that we can sort of at least get that border semi-open. Because let's be real, the border is semi-open, right? Like, how did Masai get to Toronto?
Of course. No, you know? Of course.
That was in Scotiabank.
I just think...
You know, like...
No, like, you know? Yeah. I just think all of us are just tired of this. Like we're ready to start moving back towards normal.
Yeah. Well, but the new normal is 2 hours on the podcast, Alex.
I love it.
This is like run it back for the entire off season. So we're just going to cut this video down to like 5 minute segments and we'll see you next season.
I know you got the Adobe suite or whatever skills. You should put in the graphics, put in the bottom captions, do it all. Imagine you having to do 2 hours of captions.
No, listen, you know, first off, huge thanks to all our editors. You know, you guys do a very thankless job having to edit me and Alex because we're obviously very talkative dudes. But no, man, to the extent that I know how to use Premiere is the same extent I know how to use Photoshop, which is just to like do really, really shitty, like crop a video on top of another video, basic transitions. But it was enough to make a Mad Men parody. So
can you upload a 2 hour video on YouTube?
You can. It just takes like your computer will die.
like this is 2 hours, man.
My keyboard is just going to reach out and commit seppuku on itself. It's going to just fold itself into the two. But it's
possible. All right, I got no more. I got nothing else to I just always try to extend the minutes count. This is like a Marvel movie. It's like the post credit scene.
No, this is Lord of the Rings when they go back to the Shire. I'm like, "Yo, guys, come on, man."
I don't even
you
know
destroyed
that means.
It. But you can't Bro, what do you mean? I know you saw the movie, man. I know you saw
the movie. I have the DVD set. I have the DVD set, definitely, but it just wasn't memorable. I can't believe that's the trilogy that you stand. Yeah. I thought you would like Star Wars.
Star Wars is cool, but like, I don't know, man. Some of the graphics from the old ones are really lame, and the newer stories weren't as good.
Did you read The Hobbit as well?
Did I read The Hobbit? Yeah, I read The Hobbit. And I watched The Hobbit. The Hobbit was disappointing, but no, Lord of the Rings is really good, man. Plus, look, listen, if you watch all three of those DVDs, the pandemic will be over afterwards, so, you know. You'll be all good, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, Alex, this is long enough. We're going to move this conversation to the DMs, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Whenever you publish a book, you're going to be on here to sell that book, and we're going to do our very best to plug it. But in the meantime, appreciate your time. And listeners, appreciate you for listening. And so the content plan going forward is – we're going to do at least a weekly podcast. Plus, we're going to try to get some more interviews off the ground. So look out for those as well. But in the meantime, definitely weekly podcasts, definitely going into the draft. Summer League's back. So definitely react pods for the Summer League, the Canada basketball in the offseason, the offseason itself. Like, there's going to be plenty to talk about. And I'll be on this podcast to discuss it. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.